And welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your free premier resource for all things Ohio State sports. I am your intrepid host, Matt Brown. I am the one of the college league managers here for SB Nation and the managing editor here for Land Grant Holy Land. Be sure to follow the site on Twitter at LandGrant33. I am at MattSBN. We are recording today's show. It's been a little while since we've had the opportunity to chat. Part of that has been because I've been on the road a little bit and with some difficulties in finding the right time for Colton and I to talk with some of the other duties that both of us have. But we're chatting here on Monday afternoon, catching up with you after a long period of time. Let's just be honest. Colton, you know the real reason we haven't had a chance to sit down and do a podcast in a while, right?
We've both been playing Pokemon Go. I think that's pretty much the main thing. I know that's what I've been doing.
Well, I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, that's been a constant refrain here on this program. I feel like this is perhaps the only time in my career when I feel like I've been firmly out ahead of a major trend. Because, you know, you go back to, like, May or, like, late April when there's nothing going on and I get, me and Jason Kirk and a couple of these other SB Nation people write, like, the 7,000 dang word article about which college football teams are Pokemon. And it blew up. And I thought, okay, I'm going to own this one little particular corner of the nerd universe. And now suddenly more people are playing Pokemon Go than are downloading Tinder. About as many are as using Twitter. And my man, that includes both of us. I'm not going to lie. I have the app open right now because I'm like four polywags away from a polywrath. And just in case one of them decides to wander into the SB Nation studios here, even if we're in the middle of some really important recruiting update, don't think for a second that I'm not just going to turn away and go catch that thing.
Yeah, it's important to have the app open. It's got to catch them all. I mean, that's the slogan anyway. So if you want to catch them all, you got to play the game. I haven't played like a ton. I'm only a level 8. I'm almost a level 9. So I'm working up. But I have a little bit of a moral conundrum here that I kind of feel bad about. So there's not a lot of Pokestops in my neighborhood or in my general vicinity. But one is literally right across the street from my house, and it's a Catholic church. And I feel so bad because whenever I leave the house or like to go get groceries or go to the gym, this church has like a little, not a drive through, but like a drive up little roundabout, and you can pull into it, and that's where you can collect, you know, the Pokeballs, the revives, the potions, whatever. And I don't want to say I do it every day, but at least three or four times a week, whether I'm driving out or coming back home, I'll stop at the church and just do a quick little swipe, get the Pokeballs, and drive out. So I don't know if that makes me an asshole, but I kind of feel bad about it.
You know, it's funny. I feel like almost every major church is a Pokestop. Like, you think that makes you a jerk. My church is a Pokestop, and I'm not ashamed to admit this here. Listen, I'm a human being. When church has been boring, when there's been a slow lesson, as is wants to happen, because my church lasts for 3 hours, have I caught, you know, some Pokemon during the sermon? Yes, I have. Have I leaned back and put my sound on mute so nobody can hear? And I felt really guilty about this until I leaned over, like, look over at the pew at the other end. I see another guy doing the same thing. I'm like, all right, yeah, you caught that Fearow too. What's really weird, so our office, SB Nation's office, is near downtown DC, and that I think has helped me level up much more. I'm a level 20 right now, but when I walk about a mile and a half to through town, you know, every other building's Pokestop, and I didn't realize this, but apparently four buildings down from our office is a strip club, which is also a Pokestop. So I think if you're thinking, are my Pokemon habits making me an asshole? It's not going to church. I think it's going to the Camelot Strip Club or Gentleman's Lounge, I guess, is what they call it, to get Pokeballs. That makes you more of a bad person.
I mean, I think two of the best things in life in one place right there. You got a nice little 2-for-1 deal at the Camelot. We're giving you free publicity. What more could you want?
So if you're near the DuPont Circle neighborhood of Washington, D.C., I think they give out Ultra Balls there.
Well, and so what do you think? There hasn't been a ton of backlash recently, but like right when it got released and then that first week with just all the craziness when everybody was playing it nonstop. And then you heard about there was one dude that crashed his tree into a car. There were the two dudes that fell off a cliff. I don't know if they died or not. I hope they're okay. But there were a couple people that got into accidents. And of course, you had the think pieces that were like, is this game ruining the moral fabric of America? Why can't people grow up and be adults? And it just seems so out of whack. But based off of what we know about Twitter and the internet, it wasn't really surprising.
No, you know, if there was a time, I think, right when it launched, when, you know, I look up at our analytics across all of Vox Media, and the most trafficked stories on SB Nation were about Pokemon, including a revival of the college football one. The most read stories on Vox.com were about Pokemon. The most read stories on Polygon, our video game website that you should all read, have basically been nothing but Pokemon for like a month. And it was like, you know, that way, and so everyone's looking for a Pokemon angle, including us, because everyone wants to talk about Pokemon, and there's also very little college football news. And that leads to some dumb think pieces. Is Pokemon the end of post World War II capitalism? You know, is Pokemon world's greatest monster? Like, you know, who? Let's just enjoy this for what it is, okay? I'm going outside. My daughter's getting a little bit longer walks to the playground, and I've got this dope as hell Jolteon. Like, what's the problem?
I don't know if you've heard, but that thing you like, it's actually bad.
My column. There's a lot of bad things on the internet and a lot of bad things on Twitter.com. And I think that particular thing might be the worst. However, there are some things that actually are bad. Not Pokemon, but a couple of recent developments, I think, here with Ohio State football that we can agree are not things to be celebrated. Perhaps the biggest and really the first dismissal or injury or suspension from somebody who was thought to be an actual contributor for this year's team, Briante Dunn, dismissed, and Urban Meyer says he has no chance of coming back this year.
How much of that as you've already said, it's awful, and I feel bad for the woman involved, his girlfriend. I feel bad just as a young man myself for the kid making a bad decision and hope that eventually he's able to learn from this. But given that everything that's happened with Baylor and in college athletics, and I think just athletics, professional sports as a whole in the last couple of years, it seems like we're getting to the point now where when things like this happen, coaches, at least smart coaches, are saying there's no chance, because in this environment, one, the player shouldn't come back. He should have been dismissed. And two, you're just asking for a world full of trouble if you bring kids like this back into your program.
I think it's a no-brainer. I feel like if you are charged with domestic assault, if there is credible evidence that you have put your hands on a woman, you should not be playing Division I football, and you especially should not be playing for Ohio State. I can understand how things get a little bit more complicated, you know, with the situation like with Carlos Hyde, that I think he was eventually exonerated a little bit, but in this situation, like I think it's no question, it's terrible on all sides. Definitely remove this person, and hopefully as a sport we get better at really demonstrating that this kind of behavior is not okay, even if you are good, even if you are capable of contributing. As Dunn was somebody who was expected to get carries this season, even though he's been kind of a role player on special teams mostly his previous seasons.
Well, and I think, too, the good thing, at least that I haven't seen from this, is any Ohio State fans or anybody related with Ohio State kind of holding this over, you know, Baylor fans' head or any other program's head that, well, look at our coaches. They do the right thing, because this isn't something they should be praised for. This is something that if it happens, that they should do. And it's doing the right thing. It's not, you know, doing a great thing. It's doing the right thing. And I think that's good. And like you're saying, it's the first case, I think, from Ohio State, at least in a little while, where this is a kid who was going to be a factor not only at running back, but he made some teams on special plays or special teams last year that were pretty damn good too. So it wasn't like this was just a backup who wasn't going to contribute. This was somebody in the wake of all of those skill position losses who was going to play a big part in the team.
Yeah, I would agree. I haven't seen a whole lot of that either. I don't think, the moral one-upsmanship game, which is a big part of college football and college football rivalries and college football Twitter, is I'm finding it more insufferable, I think, the older that I get, especially like this. You know, that's part of what's made kind of the Baylor-Texas dynamic a little bit extra gross. We haven't seen that. It's not worth the praise. It's unfortunate for the team. It's extremely unfortunate for those two. And hopefully he makes better decisions in life. Moving forward. It was the whole thing was surprising. That also is apparently not the only player who's on Ohio State's roster who is not going to be playing next year or not going to be contributing, although he hasn't been banished yet or anything. I believe at Big Ten Media Days, Urban Meyer admitted that Dylan Thompson is academically ineligible for this coming season. If that name doesn't sound familiar to you, that's okay. You know, Thompson hasn't really done a whole lot with Ohio State. He was a three-star commit, a higher three-star guy out of Lombard, Illinois, strong side defensive end. Had broken his kneecap, I believe, and then had to miss some time. I think he had a sack in the spring game, but the overall talent level along the defensive line has improved dramatically over the last recruiting class or two. Might have been hard for Thompson to see a bunch of time here on the field. This development clearly does not help him.
No, and I think in a case like his, a guy who was injured and then came back last year and I think redshirted and then was expected to at least provide some depth this season, when all of those 4- and 5-star guys are coming in and you know that there's kids from the 2017 class and probably the 2018 class coming in, it remains to be seen what his long-term future at Ohio State is, but it's not hard to imagine him getting lost in the shuffle. And if I remember correctly, I think somebody asked him about Dylan Thompson at the spring game, and he said something to the effect of "do something, just do something." So it doesn't seem like he was on solid footing anyway, at least from a football standpoint. And now that we see he's academically ineligible, we don't want to speculate, but it certainly doesn't look good for his future.
Yeah, Ohio State's going to have to there's going to be a lot of roster transition coming in here for Ohio State. We'll talk about this here a little more in a little bit. He would have been somebody, or that would have been a position group where I would have expected some possible transfers to be missing so much time here for academics. Would position you in a place where maybe your long term status as a member of the team could be in question. So, yeah, I am always a little bit uncomfortable openly speculating about specific people who may be transferring, but you really can't avoid the upcoming roster attrition or transitions as a potential topic here, because you're looking at this Ohio State roster right now, and literally about half the team has freshman eligibility. You know, it's an extremely young team. There's a very small senior class. There's not going to be a ton of people leaving here. The Buckeyes are chasing, as I'm sure all of you are aware, a potentially historically elite recruiting class for 2017. It's got, I think, 16 people in it right now. They're looking to take about 20 or so, and that is going to require some roster attrition. And then things are already looking pretty, you know, also strong for 2018. And even if there wasn't a numbers crunch, you can't really have half of your roster have freshman eligibility because you can't play all of those guys. People are going to get recruited over. People are going to fall down that depth chart. So it makes sense for people to want to leave just to find additional playing time. But if Ohio State's recruiting class is going to expand much larger than it is now, and certainly it looks like they're going to add at least 2 wide receivers, at least 1 more defensive back, potentially somebody else along the defensive line, some people are going to be leaving. And if I had to look at the position groups where I think that might be likely, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some more along the offensive line, the defensive line, particularly in the interior. Some of the defensive tackles picked up in the 15 and 16 classes. I also think at wideout that's possible, given just the deluge of talent that's coming in over these next this class and from last year, that maybe some of these guys that are redshirt sophomores or picked up a little bit earlier may find themselves recruited over. And Ohio State's never going to be a team that throws the ball 45 times a game, so there's only so many passes to go around.
Well, and I think the most interesting position group going forward is at quarterback. Everybody seems to talk about this being JT Barrett's last year, but unless he has an even better season than I think his freshman season, it's hard to see him leaving the program. And after him, the oldest guy is going to be a junior. Joe Burrow is going to be a redshirt sophomore at that time. Dwayne Haskins, are they going to redshirt him, or is he going to play at some point this year? And then you have Tate Martell coming in, and then, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second, 2018, Emory Jones, the quarterback from down south, he commits. So even quarterback two right now looks like it's at a complete logjam, and you're not going to go into that next season or the season afterwards with five scholarship quarterbacks or six scholarship quarterbacks. So it's a good problem to have, but there's definitely going to be some roster juggling, I think, that comes up here in the near future.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that more, since that is the latest really big commitment here for Ohio State. We already knew that the quarterback room was going to be crowded moving forward. Ohio State has as you mentioned, Haskins was one of the highest profile quarterback recruits Urban Meyer's ever had. Certainly, that Ohio State has had over the last several years. Tate Martell, you know, fringe five star, you know, candidate, one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in the country for this year's class. But one player at Friday Night Lights apparently performed even better than both of them, and now he is the latest Ohio State commit in the fold for a class that had been, I think, uncharacteristically empty until a couple of days ago and is now starting to take a little bit of shape. That is Emory Jones. He's a Georgia kid right now, a top 34 player in the entire country using the 247 rankings. He's one of the highest ranked quarterbacks, 0.9810, very high four-star guy, dual threat, and personality-wise has been compared to JT Barrett. And you know, not somebody who's going to be quite as electric as Cardale Jones, I mean, as Braxton Miller, but, you know, more mobile than Cardale Jones, and perhaps more well-rounded than Martell. A very, very high ceiling there, so that's going to make that quarterback room get even busier in a hurry. I'm with you. I suspect somebody transfers by the time they're all sophomores. You can't carry that many people.
And when you're bringing in that much top talent, you would expect, or at least hope, that one of those guys is able to step up whenever JT Barrett does decide to leave and kind of take over the program. And the good thing is that those guys are going to be so young too, that hopefully you get at least two, maybe three seasons out of them as well. And I think one thing to note here too is you and I have both been very critical of Tim Beck, as have many since he was brought on board last year. But at least from a recruiting standpoint, especially at quarterback, he's been doing pretty damn good. So he definitely deserves props for what he's been able to do commitment-wise. And we'll see if Tate Martell sticks. It looks like he probably will. And then Emory Jones, you have two cycles for him to make his decision. So who knows what can happen there. We know in recruiting that basically anything is up for game until that last day. So remains to be seen, but for now, Tim Beck has done a pretty good job. Now they just got to show it on the field.
Yeah, I was particularly critical there, but I think the improvements that he's made in recruiting, closing out of last year's class, some of the work that he's done now, especially in Texas, where Ohio State has been particularly active this year, gives him the benefit of the doubt. Now, you know, if Barrett regresses or if some of these wideouts don't develop and Ohio State's offense tanks, then I don't think it will be difficult to find a replacement, especially considering Ohio State's probably going to have to replace another assistant coach or two next year anyway, just because someone's always getting hired. But I'm a little bit less panicky than I was, say, 10 months ago when I was really down on him. The Jones isn't the only big recruiting development that's happened over the past couple of days. You've probably heard about this a little bit on our website or from me. Ohio State added two more additions on the defensive side of the ball for the class of 2017. They picked up an ace defensive lineman from just down the street at my house, Dematha Catholic, in beautiful scenic Hyattsville, Maryland. It's not that scenic. I mean, Hyattsville's fine. That's Chase Young, a near five-star player, top-ranked player in the state of Maryland, somebody that Terps fans really thought they had a good chance to get. A little bit of a – not a surprise that he committed to Ohio State, a little bit of a surprise that it happened at Friday Night Lights. He is Ohio State's currently top-rated non-five-star player, the fourth-best player in their current recruiting class. They also added the top-ranked player in Ohio that had not currently signed with the Buckeyes. That was Amir Reap, 5'11 defensive back, has offers from basically everybody in the country at this point. Ohio State holds off Michigan State. So both of those two were guys that I think the Buckeyes were favored for or were expecting to eventually join. It's going to be quiet on the 2017 recruiting front until a little bit later in August when some of these big wideouts make their mark here. But I guess other than wide receiver, you figure there might be one, two, maybe three positions left. Where else do you think the Buckeyes go, and who else do you want to see in this group?
Honestly, I'm just interested to see what the wide receivers. You got Tyshawn Lindsey, and I think a few others. Grimes still has to has to commit. So I think those are the two big fish. But I wanted to ask you, how many more kids are available in this class? You mentioned the position groups, but at 16 total right now, what are we looking at for the rest of the class?
So the number that I'm hearing a lot is 20. They think they can get to 20. There's some attrition that hasn't happened yet that the coaching staff is banking on. Whether it gets above 20, there's plenty of really good kids who want in with Ohio State that the Buckeyes would take. They just don't have the room right now. So if you have some guys who get into trouble with the law over the last month or so, or with class that might normally get the benefit of the doubt, I think they're gone. If there are people who are kind of loafing or more developmental guys, like they might be strongly suggested to go take a look at Kent State or something. If there's not unexpected attrition, I think you're looking at 20. Those two wideouts, Okuda at safety or corner, if you can get him, and then whether that's Cam Akers, whether that's a defensive tackle, whether that's a linebacker, I think it's the first guy in the boat, and that ends everything. I don't know if Ohio State really needs to take a running back in this class, since they already have one and they're likely going to have two in 2018. I think they would probably, if they had 23 spots, there's enough high four stars that they would go after, but I think a lot of people would have to be leaving the team for them to get there. It's possible.
Well, and it is, and something that's interesting to note on that front is just looking at the past history of this team. Who would have thought 2 years ago that as a redshirt sophomore, Darren Lee would have been a first-round pick, or that Jalen Marshall, even though he didn't get drafted, would decide to leave, and even with the inconsistency with Michael Thomas, that he would decide to leave, that he would be talented enough to leave and be a second-round pick, and then even Cardale Jones, that he would get his shot and he would be drafted. So I think Ohio State's recruiting has been at such a high level that you really never know which of these kids is going to step up and make that leap. And some of the kids with the redshirt freshman status that only play 2 years, a guy like Sam Hubbard, if he goes off this year and has 10.5, 11 sacks, he could be a first round pick and leave after playing basically just 2 years in the program. So you never really know, but it, like you're saying, it kind of looks like 20 is the key number for this next class.
Yeah, we're gonna see. That's gonna be one of the I think really interesting storylines of the first month or so of the season or fall camp, to see if we see some of those people kind of fall out when the depth chart and the position groups kind of firm up a little bit. But you're absolutely right. There's gonna be some guys here. Like right now, Raquan McMillan is probably the only super obvious underclassman or somebody who might leave for the NFL early. But if Jamarco Jones or Curtis Samuel have big years, that might open up a little bit more roster flexibility as some more people depart. Now that might not be great for the strength of Ohio State in general. Like I think they're looking like a potential national championship contender in 2017. Maybe they're a little bit less so if a bunch of other people jump early. But one way or the other, there's going to be some very talented players in Columbus.
Yeah, and like we keep saying, these are good problems to have. This is definitely better than losing a ton of seniors and having to start over, just completely from scratch. All of these kids are talented. They may be a little bit green, but it's not like they don't have pedigree coming in. So it's just a matter of time or just a matter of getting them onto the field and seeing how they play, and then you just go from there.
Yeah. I'm trying to look here about some of the other big takeaways. I feel like compared to the last couple of years, this was a slower Big Ten media day. Now, granted, there's a big caveat. I normally go. This year I had to help with some SB Nation things for our internship program and some other tasks, and so I wasn't able to go. But just from looking on TV or reading some of the other comments, I feel like there wasn't as much big news or anything really changed. Now, I don't know if it's because the conference isn't as interesting this year, or if things are down or what. Was there something that I missed?
No, I really think the three biggest stories were obviously the tragedy with the punters from Michigan State and Nebraska and them tragically passing away. And the other two were Jim Harbaugh deciding to wear a hat when he spoke on the podium, and James Franklin's quote or not quote, whatever he said about teams like Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan using negative recruiting against Penn State. But I think all those last two stories, they kind of just blew away after a couple of days, and they aren't even talking points anymore. So I don't think really anything came from Big Ten Media Days, which is kind of a surprise given that this is the first season where Michigan under Harbaugh is projected to maybe go to the playoff and maybe even play or win the national championship. But even he didn't really say anything of too much interest. And it seems like Meyer never really says anything to spark anything. So when you have the two biggest personalities there not making any headlines, it just kind of makes for a bland media day.
Yeah, man, I got to tell you, I can't think of anything I want to talk about less than negative recruiting and Penn State and whining about that non-story. So let's talk about something completely different, because I do want to ignore that.
I was going to say, are you sure? Because Big 12 expansion is still on the table.
Oh, well, listen, you know, I've kind of gone back and forth about that, right? Like, right when it appeared that like the Big 12 wasn't going to expand, like right before that teleconference, I think I sent a message to like the SB Nation .com Slack room, and I was like, I was so frustrated. Like, I've been doing this stupid song and dance for 3 years. I've been SB Nation's special Mormon correspondent. I've done all this stuff here, and now they're punting again. This is the worst. I'm done with it. And then they open up the can of worms again. Now maybe they're pulling it back with ESPN and Fox kind of throwing a temper tantrum and everything. But one, I mean, like, selfishly, this prints page views for our BYU site, and I think it's a little bit more interesting than like our James Franklin's feelings hurt. Have your thoughts changed at all about who should be added or whether that impacts Ohio State in any way? I feel like from what I've read and heard and followed along, I have a guess for how this is going to end, but your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, I think my big takeaway is I don't really care who they add. If it's BYU and, I'm in Colorado, I don't care if they add CSU. I've seen so many articles around here touting the Denver TV market and what they can bring. They can't bring anything, because back when I was growing up watching CU play Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, nobody cared about it then. So they sure as hell aren't going to care about it if CSU is playing those teams. And then you look out east, I think Cincinnati is at least an interesting story from an Ohio State perspective, that you have other teams that are going to come in to Ohio and have that leeway, but that doesn't worry me too much. They're already Alabama, Notre Dame comes in there anyway. I don't think Ohio State's going to be competing with Texas and Oklahoma, and when that Texas pipeline is right there for all of those schools. My big takeaway from it is the Big 12 can do whatever it wants. Eventually, I think the most likely thing to happen is either the SEC, the Pac-12, or the Big Ten is going to be the first one to step in and make that offer to Texas or Oklahoma and take those teams, and the Big 12 is just going to kind of die out.
Yeah, I don't – my guess is that in 8 years, when this grant of rights is happening, because I don't expect it to get renewed even if the conference does expand – I think that the Big Ten or the SEC is going to step in and poach some of these teams, and that on some level makes this entire conversation moot. But who the hell knows what we're going to be doing in 8 years? If we're still doing this, or is there still football, or any of these other kind of crazy things? But for now, it seems to me that despite the network showing a temper tantrum here, I think them expanding by four is the single most likely outcome, because that gets them the most money. And I think you'd be looking at Houston, Cincinnati, BYU, and Memphis, maybe UConn instead of Memphis. But I feel like those three have separated themselves a little bit. Selfishly, I kind of like BYU to be in there, just because I think the howlings of the Mormon persecution complex, if they don't, will be insufferable, and it will personally make my life a little bit worse. But I'm a little interested. It will be interesting to see if Cincinnati, what level of a threat to Big Ten recruiting Cincinnati would become if they become a Big 12 team, since they'll have some more money. I don't think they're never going to beat Ohio State for anybody, but could they beat a Michigan State for some? For a Xavier kid, like, maybe. How it might change basketball recruiting within the state of Ohio, I think, could also be interesting, because Cincinnati does every once in a while beat a kid that Ohio State wants, and them being elevated into a very strong basketball conference will make things a little bit trickier for the state here as a whole. But I'm glad that story is wrapping up. I'm going on vacation tomorrow night, so I think, or I guess tonight when this publishes, and I'll be gone here throughout the rest of the week. And for part of that, I'm going to be super off the grid. So I completely expect that after following the story super closely since 2011, like the one weekend or the one, you know, weekend plus a couple of days that I go off the grid that was planned ahead of time, that's when everything's going to happen.
This final piece is just going to drop and change everything. And it would be hilarious to see Texas have to go to stores every other year. I'd be fine with that.
That'd be hilarious. Or like New Orleans. Like Tulane would be fun.
Yeah, that's one we didn't even bring up. If there was one school that, albeit way back in the past, has power conference ties back in the old SEC, it's Tulane. That's a hell of a market. If they want to talk about bringing in new eyes, and not only that, but bringing in a market for recruiting, where better than that New Orleans area? I mean, I know the Cincinnati area is great, but that is an incredible market for recruiting, and LSU sure as hell wouldn't like that.
No, it's interesting, right? Like, I poo-pooed this idea when I first heard it. I used to live down the street from Tulane. I took classes with Tulane. I like them, but they're not the biggest team in New Orleans is LSU. The second biggest team in New Orleans is LSU. The third biggest team in New Orleans is like some other random SEC team, and like not always New Orleans not a Tulane town. Like I don't even think like Broadway is like a New Orleans is like a Tulane neighborhood. Their market share is really small, in part because it's not that big of a school. They've been good basically twice in our lifetime, but it's an AAU member. It's academically very strong. It's got this beautiful new stadium. There's infrastructure that's still moving up around the school. They got an athletic director who's tight with Bob Bowlsby. And let's be honest, like every conference could use a Northwestern, right? Everyone can use a Vanderbilt, and that'd be fun. I'd rather go cover another Tulane game and go back to New Orleans than I would go to stores.
Well, from a football style of play standpoint, with all of those up-tempo spread offenses that everybody likes to call finesse, you add in this badass triple option team that just likes to bludgeon people. Who wouldn't want to see them rush for 700 yards versus Texas Tech or really take it to Oklahoma State or Baylor? I'm personally fine with seeing that just to have that little bit of flavor into the Big 12.
That would be really fun. Connecticut would be something very different, but trying to bring in like an essentially like a Big Ten West team, you know, stylistically into all air raid everything. I believe in 2017, Tulane plays at Oklahoma, if you want to see that. They, of course, played the Buckeyes in 2018. We'll see exactly how option-y they are at that point. And they have a couple other bigger games in the future scheduled. So, that might be fun to watch. Probably doesn't happen, but they got dope uniforms. I think I speak for this podcast that while Pokemon is probably priority one, you know, we have a soft spot for Tulane, too, down there.
Yeah, we love the green wave. I think we're about 35 minutes into this. The last thing that I wanted to get into were Bill Connolly of SB Nation's Big Ten power rankings. And based off of the comment section, there was a lot of disagreement during his 128-team preview when he was previewing the Big Ten about putting Ohio State third. And not only that, but putting Iowa eighth. Is this something to be mad online about, in your opinion?
No. I wrote about this a couple days ago. Went up on Sunday, I think. Iowa wasn't that good last year. Iowa had a good record, but they were beating mostly unimpressive teams by not very big margins, and the efficiency stats didn't like them. And I think most of us who watched Iowa football thought, like, this team's fine, but they've been fortunate and they're skating a little bit. And now, even though they have a good quarterback and the best defensive back in the Big Ten, and some pieces along the line of scrimmage that I think are, you know, you can feel good about. Iowa tends to coach their offensive linemen very well. They're not very explosive. They're maybe less so this year. They have a harder schedule. They're probably going to regress. If you wanted to find something to get mad online about, it might be Penn State at fourth, or maybe Michigan State ahead of Ohio State, like if you're really into getting mad online. But mostly I think what Bill wrote is quite reasonable, and that can all happen. It changed the way that I felt about a couple of Big Ten teams after reading through the whole thing.
Yeah, I think the only big qualm I would have, and it's not even that big of a disagreement, is I'd probably put Iowa over Minnesota and Wisconsin just based solely on Wisconsin's schedule. Maybe they'll be better team strength-wise, but just with a worse record. But I think Iowa's probably better than both of those teams. But Ohio State at third does seem like it's right. There's just so much that even people that watch the program exclusively as fans or as writers, that we just don't know with how much production they lost offensively and defensively, how it's going to work. And based off of some of the research that he's done, they lost it at probably the two biggest key positions outside of quarterback and wide receiver and defensive back. So they're going to be very young, and I would anticipate that by the end of the season, we're going to have a very good idea of how they are, and they'll probably be pretty damn good. But just at the start of the season, it's really hard to kind of get a read for what they're going to do just because there's so many new pieces.
I generally am in favor of giving talent the benefit of the doubt, and the Buckeyes have that more than anything, but doesn't always win. We saw the Michigan State game last year. We saw a lot of Northwestern games, and it would not be totally shocking if the Buckeyes were third or felt outside. That's why you have to play the games. My phone's buzzing, so that means that I think there's Pokemon afoot. So it seems like a pretty good time here for us to wrap up. We will probably be chatting again when I get back from vacation. I'm going to head up to Chicago. I'm going to drop my 2-year-old daughter off with my in-laws. My wife and I are going to have like 4 days alone without the baby for the first time since she was born. This is going to change my life.
Wow, this is epic. I hate you, you stupid baby time.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to go to the woods and go camping for 2 days in Wisconsin. I'm going to go get a nice hotel and hang around downtown Madison. We're going to go to Chicago and see some old friends. I'm going to sleep in. I'm going to, talk to my wife without the baby coming in and, smacking us in the face and demanding to talk to mommy again and again and again. It's going to be stupendous.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm happy to. Welcome to my bachelor-free, no-responsibility life.
Ah, man. Go to hell. But I'm supposed to sit here as, but my life is so much more fulfilling, and everything was just vapid and empty as a Not that's all bullshit, man. Like, that like, all that's great. Like, enjoy it. Don't put on pants for a couple days that nobody makes you.
Fantastic. I love it.
All right, friends. Well, on that important relationship note, I'm Matt Brown. That's Colton Denning. Here, this has been the Hangout in the Holy Land. You can find the show on iTunes. You can find it on Blog Talk Radio. You can find it on our website, landgrantholyland.com. Follow us both on Twitter. Say something nice, or maybe not so nice. It's up to you. I'm not your dad. In the iTunes comments. And we'll be in touch when I get back back to Maryland.
Team Mystic!
Team Valor. Mystic sucks. And go Bucks.